has been designated by Veha Palkarekin with the church title of Avax Paraveda for Armenians, Mr. Kerem Cholakian. Representing the Grand Commander of the Knights of Vartan, Edward Korkoyan, is his Grand District Representative, Mr. Garo Sektorian. And representing the Grand Matron of the Daughters of Vartan, Asien Surmeyan, is her District Representative, Mrs. Ani Minetian. I would like to thank Mrs. Ani Minetian, Mrs. Elizabeth Aydin, Mr. Michael Kenden, and Dr. Luisa Kubikian for our refreshments tonight. I'd like just to say a few words about our distinguished academicians. I'll start with Mr. Aram Arkun first. He's the coordinator, as we know, of the Krikor and Flora Sohrat Information Center here. He's a specialist in modern Armenian history. Is the holder of academic degrees from Princeton, University of Pennsylvania, and is a doctoral candidate at UCLA. Mr. Arkun is also the editor of Ararat, the Armenian American Quarterly of the AGBU, and secretary of the board of directors at the Armenian Center at the Columbia University. He recently co-chaired a highly stimulating conference entitled State Building and Policy Making in an independent Armenia from the years 1991 to 2006, which was co-sponsored by the Columbia University Armenian Center together with the University of Michigan Ann Arbor Armenian Studies Program. Our second discussant for tonight is Professor Denis Papazian. One of the key benefits that I find for being a member of the Knights of Vartan is that in the process you end up meeting such fine individuals like him. And he's a newcomer with his family in this metropolitan area, but he's well remembered by many of us because he was twice keynote speaker at the genocide commemorations in Times Square. A recipient of four academic degrees, including a PhD from University of Michigan Ann Arbor in history. His specialty is Russian and European history, and he's been a full professor at University of Michigan Dearborn since 1971. He's also served at one time as the Dean of the College of Literature, Science, and Arts, and also as the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs at the same university. Just as importantly, if not more importantly, he was and is the founder of and major fundraiser and director of the University of Michigan Armenian Research Center, the first research center of Armenian studies established in the United States, and the only one affiliated with the university. He's been a key participant in the political process for the Armenian issues, and he was a founding executive director, chairman, and also director of the Armenian Assembly of America. He's also served a number of years as member of the Executive Council of the Eastern Diocese, as well as being a vice chairman of that group. Presently, he's a member of the State of New Jersey Holocaust Education Council, and he is the husband of Dr. Mary Arshaguni Papazian, Professor of English and Dean of College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Montclair State University, and he has two beautiful daughters, Annie and Marie. Now we come to the main event. Professor Israel Cherney is the founder and executive director of the Center of Holocaust and Genocide in Jerusalem. He's a leading international scholar in the area of psychology and genocide studies, as well as family therapy. He's the editor-in-chief of the Encyclopedia of Genocide. He's a clinical psychologist by profession and a professor of psychology and family therapy in the program for advanced studies in integrative psychotherapy, which he founded in 1993 at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. You see displayed there his latest book. He's been the author of many books, but he's especially proud of that book, which has received excellent reviews. Now, just as importantly, he's the president of the International Association of Genocide Scholars, and this is the premier group of experts on genocides. It's the same organization that in 1997 unanimously passed a formal resolution affirming the Armenian genocide. It's the same organization which was involved in having 126 leading scholars of the Holocaust, including Elie Wiesel and Yehuda Bauer, place a statement in the New York Times on June 9, 2000, declaring the incontestable fact of the Armenian genocide. And it is the same organization that June 7, 2005 unanimously approved a letter to Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey in response to his call for an impartial study by historians, saying that the scholarly evidence is so overwhelming that it would be best for the future of the Turkish people if the present government would acknowledge the responsibility of a previous government for the genocide of the Armenians. We are indeed very fortunate to have Professor Charney with us and his wife, Judy, who also is a psychologist. And so at this time, please welcome Professor Israel Charney.
Thank you for your warmth. Thank you, Arthur, specifically, for your good words and for all of the amazing organizational work that I have seen you doing over the last weeks and months for these events. I am, as you know from my record, always pleased to be with the Armenian community, and I'm going to start out in a light way, and occasionally we'll get light because our topic is so serious, and I am a firm believer in living and loving and having fun along with being terribly serious about the battle against genocide denial. So since this event is in New York, I've got to tell you that I had a major decision to make and reveal to you something very intimate. Many of you know of my history as a professor from Israel, so for some of you, the first shock is that I speak English as relatively well as I do, and the answer to that is I'm an American and an Israeli. I have both citizenships. I was born, as a matter of fact, in a place called New York. And the question I had about tonight was which accent I should give my talk in, if you know what I mean. Outside, I placed a number of flyers. There aren't that many, but let me tell you what they are. One set is membership applications for the same International Association of Genocide Scholars that Dr. Kubikian was speaking about. We will welcome very much the several of you for whom membership in the association would be appropriate. We're very interested in enlarging our membership. We're very interested in drawing scholars and leaders from any number of communities, and certainly including the Armenian community, towards whom and with whom, as you gather from our work, we have had a very strong relationship from the very beginning. There are also a few flyers there for those of you who are not acquainted with the Encyclopedia of Genocide, which has had a magnificent record, and I would like to add the emphasis that the Encyclopedia, for those of you who are in some educational work, the Encyclopedia is now available as an electronic edition on internet, which means for high school, college, graduate schools, institutions, it is possible to purchase one electronic copy and use it at multiple outlets, something that we're very pleased with, and which came about because of the terrific success of the printed edition. The Encyclopedia is, for me, like all of my work, a statement about the genocides of all peoples. when I relate to the genocide of my people, the Jews, when I relate to the Armenian genocide, my heart, my mind are devoted to that specific genocide, but alongside of any genocide of any people, my mind and heart are also related to the genocides that have taken place of all other peoples, of many peoples. And I say tragically, the genocides that are and will be taking place to many fellow peoples on this planet Earth. The encyclopedia has been devoted to that kind of a statement about genocide as a universal human problem. But in the process, I am proud and happy to note that it was probably the first encyclopedia in the English language to give a major, full, positive, clear-cut treatment of the Armenian genocide. That treatment includes many entries, one of which is a survey of how shabbily and wrongly the Armenian genocide had been treated in many encyclopedias up until that time. And finally, there is a flyer for the book that I'm so happy to introduce. I'm waiting for the first copy to arrive from the University of Nebraska Press any day now. Official publication is July, but it will be available as of this month. Let me tell you what it's about. So many years ago, I, the psychologist that you introduced, Arthur, decided that I wanted to attempt to contribute my understanding in psychology to the study of genocide. And then for many years, I was a lone psychologist along with the political scientists and the historians and other such scholars at various conferences on genocide. As the years have gone by, I unfortunately have learned something about psychology also from the study of genocide, which means I've learned something about us human beings and the way we are, and I mean this as a purposeful double entendre, screwed together from the way we carry on in the course of doing the most evil, the most rotten possible things to fellow human beings. And the questions I started asking myself were, where are these characteristics in us human beings in our daily lives before any number of us become victims, before any number of us become perpetrators in genocides? So that this book is about the use of our minds fascistically or democratically in our everyday lives as people, in the way we do things up here to ourselves. For example, create crazy diets where you simply have to do according to the rule of that diet. It's almost like a fascist mind telling you, you must and otherwise you will. And what we do in our everyday relationships. I know the loyalty, the devotion of the Armenian community to the subject of the Armenian genocide. You will find in the index of the book the Armenian genocide referred to a number of times, but it is not, the book is not about any genocide, it is about us people, and that's that special note of excitement that Dr. Kubikin was telling you as I come back around towards the end of my career, this way, full circle, first attempting to contribute to understanding genocide, and now strangely and sadly, from genocide, I learn about us as human beings. I think we can take that off. Can I have somebody to help me with Aram? Thank you so much. Now, for our topic of tonight, let me also start with a quick congratulatory note to the Armenian community and to us as a community concerned about the Armenian genocide. I've got to be careful, there's a wire there. We have a tremendous amount of work to do all the time in combating denial of the Armenian genocide. And yet, I want to tell you that overall, I believe that the Armenian community and all of us with you have done a terrific job in the last 25 years, and that we have really won the battle in terms of establishing the intellectual record of the Armenian genocide. Now, that doesn't mean denial is over, but we really have won the battle, and for the fun of it and for the seriousness of it, here is a Turkish writer writing in the Turkish Daily News just last year, and he says, this is the final match. We have lost all the previous games, says the Turkish writer, and he's damned right about it. And he says, menacingly, and that will get us towards our topic for tonight, we need to win this one. The Turkish community is engaged in an effort at a final ball game, at a final attempt to get through their denial message. He says, we can't tolerate any mistakes this time. I want you to know, we did win the World Series so far. And we have to go on. Finally, for my introductory remarks, since I'm going to be telling you, speaking with you, discussing with you mainly the conference in Turkey that just took place, from which I returned just a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, here's a quotation from a man whom I've come to admire and love, Armin Wegener. You know the story of this amazing German writer who witnessed the Armenian genocide unexpectedly, inadvertently, took photographs. He was in the German army. He was told to stop taking photographs. He hid them. He maintained them. They are part of the record of the genocide for us. He wrote a letter to President Wilson. Years later, when the Nazis come to power, he is a proud German. He writes a letter to Adolf Hitler. That, unfortunately, was a mistake, and his innocence led him to having... He was visited a few days after his letter by members of the Gestapo and taken off to camps and suffered very deeply and in many ways was broken by his experience in the German concentration camps, from which he managed to get out. He wrote, and I'm using this as my introduction to discussing the conference in Turkey, whoever speaks the truth, says Armin Wegener, whoever speaks the truth, says an Armenian proverb that he's quoting from, has to have always at his disposal a saddled horse. What's going on with this conference in Turkey? The Turkish government authorized Istanbul University, which I understand in the politics of Turkish academia is a right arm of the government, to conduct a conference on new directions. You've got the folder going around in Turkish-Armenian relations. They sent out invitations to many Armenian scholars, many genocide scholars like myself, whose positions are totally known, that we understand the factuality of the Armenian genocide, and they invited their own all-star performers of denial to come to the same conference. Now, you know that in Turkey it has been and still is, if you're legalistic about it, against the law to say Armenian genocide. There have been, the last list I saw was something like 75 to 90 ongoing trials against people who have used those phrases. Those trials are essentially for Turkish citizens, and I have not seen them imposed yet on non-nationals. Nonetheless, that's the climate in which that country has been operating. We were assured that we would have full freedom of speech. The Turks stood by their assurances. But we didn't know that before going, and you can imagine with the sensitivity of an ethnic community, and I can join you in that very deeply, how uncertain so many of us were whether to go or not to go, beginning with the fantasies, the concerns about our own security and safety, the security and safety of our colleagues, and continuing from there to the overall atmosphere of this conference and to the meanings the conference would have and the uses to which the Turkish government was going to put this conference. And that's going to be a major part of what I address and a major part of what you are more than welcome to address in your comments subsequent to our three presentations as speakers and discussants. And controversy and differences of opinion, I think we welcome them in our way of life and do not have to be frightened about them. The decision whether to go or not, Dennis, how many thousands of emails were exchanged by a bunch of us who became a network of the... And I will say now, I think the decision to go was a correct one, and I think the decision not to go was a correct one, and I hope you have the philosophical capacity for bearing the contradiction between those two statements. It was not by chance that in the list of invitees, the good Turks of recent years were not included. So that means that Professor Gocek and Professor Taner Akşam and Professor Halil Berktay and wonderful Turkish publisher Recep, is that pronunciation? It's a soft G? Zaraglu. Zaraglu, thank you. The lovely man. And slowly I will get my pronunciations corrected. They were not invited until the very last few weeks, about 2 weeks before the conference. And then it seemed to me that the invitations to them were desperate by Istanbul University, because the number of us, Armenian scholars and people devoted to the history of the Armenian genocide who were coming, was so small that they then reached out. Don't forget, those Turkish scholars are the worst enemies for the Turkish denial position, because they're their people who have taken a clear-cut stand and are doing magnificent work, both as scholars and, it seems to me, as leaders of the process of our confronting the denial of the Turkish government. We ended up being five people on our team. You can count in the brochure of the program going around how many they had. Is it 60? Is it 70? Dennis and I were discussing the odds that this represents. I suggested to our group that our name ought to be the David team. And there we were. Who were we? We were my very dear colleague and friend, Professor Yair Oron from Israel, whom I think many of you know, whose books on the relationship of the Jewish community at the time of the Armenian genocide, the Jewish community in Palestine, the Yishuv, whose books on the history and the sad and often regrettable history of the relationship of the State of Israel to the Armenian genocide are must reading. Yair turned out to be the first speaker of the conference. And his title in English, in the program you'll find everything announced in English and in Turkish, says explicitly the Armenian genocide in the land of Turkey. It took a while for us to find out that the Turkish title does not say the Armenian genocide. Oh, here we go again, the old tricks. But interesting things happened. One interesting thing was that the head of the Turkish Historical Society got up after Yair's remarks and apologized for the error in the program and corrected it. More interestingly, the newspapers picked up Yair's opening talk, in which he says proudly and explicitly, I saw him as a lion standing there with his mane proudly in the wind. He says the Armenian genocide, and darned if he wasn't reported prominently in a good half a dozen Turkish newspapers the next day, with his photograph, with the headline, with the text of his remarks. That is change, is it not? In a country where the law does not allow these words to be mentioned. A second member of our David team was a very special man by the name of Araf Serafian. If you have followed over the years the productions of the Gomidas Institute, Gomidas, thank you, and another of our participants was Hilmar Kaiser, And Ara and Hilmar are the two key people in the Gomidas Institute work over the years. You know what very special work they have been doing in producing major documents of the Armenian Genocide. And here another miracle happened. Ara was invited to appear on Turkish television in a major prime-time program for well over a half hour in the course of those days that we were in Istanbul. And he did so. Now, Ara also reported that the president of the Turkish Historical Society proposed to him that they and Armenian scholars like Ara Serafian do a project together, for example, examine some graves. There's lots of work to be done, and I will say very quietly that sometimes includes the possibility that our people also commit crimes in the course of battles. I am well known for taking clear public stands and research stands in Israel on a number of genocidal massacres that our Jewish people have committed in the course of the War of Independence, and subsequently, no, we are not major genociders. Yes, we are human beings, and in the course of battles, we too have committed crimes. It is not wrong to seek the full truth in a perspective where the truth of wrong acts on our part is not taken as a basis for turning the whole picture upside down. And Ara Serafian responded publicly to the offer by saying, I will definitely consider the offer. And he meant it with the sincerity in his response to the head of the Turkish Historical Society. Something good is happening. Don't worry, you can relax. I'll tell you lots of bad things in just a few minutes. I'll get us back to good old-fashioned, accustomed to things like the distortion of the title of Yair's talk, but I want us to hear and know of both sides that are taking place, and then we have to evaluate it. On our David team was a wonderful man, Professor Levon Zekian from Venice, who a year ago was one of the two people responsible for what was, for me, the first conference on the Armenian Genocide in which Turkish scholars participated. But it was those, quotes, good Turkish scholars whom I had the pleasure and honor of meeting in Venice a year ago. Hilmar Kaiser, who is a German by nationality, spends a good deal of time in Turkey these days, because he is busy, as he has always attempted to be, in the Turkish archives, which he says have now granted him full access to many documents. Hilmar Kaiser was the young researcher who was thrown out of Turkey some years ago for his daring then, as a German researcher, they hadn't yet identified him, to come and study the origins of the Armenian Genocide. Again, something is happening. While we were there, Hilmar introduced Professor Yair Aron to the director of the archive. Yair has been invited to use the archive to study records of the Jewish responses to the Armenian genocide. Something is happening. And finally, in our David team, there was my participation. And I want to tell you what I did. I did something that was either clever. A nephew of mine compared what I did to something that Bertolt Brecht does in one of his plays, where in his protesting a contemporary war, he goes back to an ancient war and projects the story of the horror of an ancient war as his way of protesting the contemporary. So what I did was either intelligent and creative, or it was cowardly and seeking to play safe in a way that does not deserve to be respected, because I, in my talk, did not speak of the Armenian genocide. I spoke of many different instances of denials of doing harm to other peoples by a variety of countries in our world. I brought examples from Japan, from China, from Iran, from Egypt, from the United States, from Israel, from the former Yugoslavia. My message to any person listening intelligently to these examples of their behaviors, you know, the Japanese, the Chinese, you listen to the absurdity, the ridiculousness, the plain, bold-faced lying, the stupidity, the fascist control of information that is going on in these denials, and if you have half a brain, you have to say, good Lord, they're nuts, they're crazy, they're ridiculous. I didn't mention Turkey. I didn't mention the Armenian genocide. As I said, I was either Brechtian smart or Charnian cowardly. We take our choice. Nonetheless, in their written presentation, which follows, after all our verbal presentations were all of 20 minutes, in the written presentation which we committed ourselves to providing, I do go on to state explicitly my relationship to the Armenian genocide in a final section of the paper, because I don't want to leave it in any way possibly ambiguous. And I also have added to the paper, as Professor Papazian knows, because we correspond a lot, I've added a very explicit disclaimer, which says, by agreeing to publication of the present paper in the proceedings of the conference, the author is aware that he is necessarily agreeing to publication of this paper alongside of any number of gross denials of the history of the Armenian genocide committed by the Ottoman Empire. I would normally never agree to publish a paper in a book which has as much garbage as I'm going to refer to in a moment. But this is a very unusual situation. I go on in the disclaimer, publication of this paper by Istanbul University alongside of denials of the Armenian genocide in no way is to be taken as the author's approval or agreement of such with such denials, but as a willingness to open new windows in Turkish society towards learning about the Western world's established history of the Armenian genocide. Let me tell you about the garbage, so that we have a perspective about what was going on. Paper after paper by the Turks, with a few exceptions, repeated every form of denial that we have heard about and read over the years. The deportations of the Armenians was crisis management. Population loss was due to deportation and migrations, comparable to the number of those in England who died from the flu. The state was very helpful in sending Gomidas for medical treatment. No mention of the degree and the nature of his suffering. The major reason for deaths was relocation, illnesses and epidemics and starvation. Oh, and there were also deaths from bandit attacks. Routes were changed to make sure the transfer was made safely. A favorite theme, forgery, forgery, forgery. Anything that presents the record of the Armenian genocide, the answer is forgery. Once upon a time, there was an American ambassador to Turkey, God bless him, Ambassador Morgenthau, and Morgenthau's record on every level is known to all of us, and his dispatches and his activism and his efforts to stop the genocide. Ambassador Morgenthau's diary, a forgery. Once upon a time, the British government issued a so-called blue book that was written by the Secretary of State, Lord Bryce, and by a somewhat promising historian named Arnold Toynbee. Here's one of the papers at the conference in Istanbul now. The paper is given by a former Turkish ambassador to the United States. He's obviously a very distinguished man in the Turkish political hierarchy and could feel the energies and the way people related to him all around him. We knew a lot about him from the time that he served in Washington, including, many of you will remember a story that one day, among the letters he systematically sent out to anybody who wrote about the Armenian genocide, one day he sent a letter to Professor Robert Lifton, a professor of psychiatry at Yale University, who had written a book not about the Armenian genocide, but about his studies of the medical doctors at Auschwitz. But in the course of that book, he also footnoted and referred briefly to the Armenian genocide a number of times. Therefore, he deserved to get a spanking letter from the Turkish ambassador, except that a secretary at the embassy in Washington made a deadly mistake. She included in the letter to Lifton a copy of an internal memo to the Turkish ambassador, who's now speaking years later in Istanbul, written by somebody named Heath Lowry, who you will recognize, ostensibly an academician. The memo, though, as you read it, is not an academic evaluation of what Lifton has said about the Armenian genocide. It's a politically manipulative letter, which also includes overtones of anti-Semitism. Remember, the context was this book about the medical doctors at Auschwitz. It was such a scandal in terms of its violation of the ethos of academia that it became the basis for a marvelous paper that was published in an important journal called Holocaust and Genocide Studies, a journal which is published to this day by the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, in which the letter and the whole policy of Turkish denials of the Armenian genocide was analyzed in a very brilliant and helpful way. Where am I getting to? What's the paper given in 2006 in Istanbul by the former ambassador of Turkey to the United States? The Blue Book, written by Lord Bryce and by Arnold Toynbee, was, say it as a chorus with me, forgery! And on it goes. The documents of the court-martial, where any number of the perpetrators, including the leaders and other senior perpetrators, were adjudged guilty by the Turkish military tribunal itself, in that window that takes place of truth in the Turkish context, the documents of the court-martial were, chorus, forgery! And on it goes. And it was a victor's trial. But there's also, it's not only that anything is twisted and stated in whatever way is needed in order to turn it into something inauthentic and useless. There's a constant contradiction that nobody pays any attention to. You see, the court martials, I'm going to do Jewish gestures now, Talmudic gestures. The court martials, the documents were a forgery. But the court-martials prove that they couldn't have committed genocide because otherwise they wouldn't have had court-martials. Wait a second. It's getting to me. It happened all the time. One speaker after another, with few exceptions. The exceptions delighted me. The exceptions also were Brechtian, though. Or, if I may connect my name to it again, Charnian. They spoke of what needs to be in genuine research about the genocide, that, for example, one speaker said, one Turkish speaker said, we need cooperative politics rather than competitive politics between peoples. We need a fact-based history. We need, and listen to this phrase, it is so beautiful, empathy memory rather than collective memory. And there's no intent to knock collective memory in its healthy sense, but the point being that collective memory, such as Turkish collective memory with its distortion, can often be used for distorting and removing the facts of other people's experiences. Empathy memory means caring about what, by Turks, about what happened to the Armenians. But the man never said the word Armenians, that speaker, nor did he refer to the Turks. And I think that that was appropriate behavior and constructive behavior at this stage, unless you have the kind of belief that you go in and you do everything at once and you're always totally heroic and you're up front with all the information and God will be on your side for doing that. I think there are processes that need to be observed in this world, and I want to give you, from my concluding remarks, my sense of what was going on in this conference. I think the Turkish government is, on a practical level, sincerely interested in joining the European Union. Does that make the changes that I'm reporting dirty or wrong? No, I think it's interesting how history works, and I think history can be terrific along, it's lousy enough, why not celebrate the parts of it that are useful and constructive? I think that the Turkish assessment is that their possibilities of becoming accepted, of being accepted for the European Union, are much less, perhaps even negligible, unless they clean house with regard to their policies towards the Kurdish people and as regards their relationship to the Armenian genocide, the history of same. I think this conference was a call. I think it's one of a number of gestures. I've begun to assemble records of other initiatives. There was one in Vienna that they have been attempting. I think it is a call on their part, beginning a process where they want to be able to show that they are bringing in speakers like our David team and allowing stories in the newspapers and allowing appearances on television. I was on CNN Turkey to say the words that have not been said. Simultaneously, I think that they are allowing their deniers not to go into psychiatric shock by being retired all at once and prematurely. And they're telling them, you say exactly what you've been saying all these years and just carry the flag. And they're cheering them on because Turkish culture overall has not changed overnight at all. Nonetheless, look what is happening in Turkish culture. It is in these last few years that we have brave, brave Turkish people like the people I mentioned before, like Zaragoğlu and Berktay and Akçam, who are speaking up in Turkey and outside of Turkey. We have writers who are standing trial and being vindicated. We have occasional Turkish media presentations which speak of the Armenian genocide. there is a process emerging in Turkish culture, along with the fact that the denial is as rotten, as terrible, as stupid, as insulting, as wrong as it always was. What should be our relationship to it? I'll tell you that in the final wrap-up of the conference, I was the only member of our David team to be included in the final panel, and I proposed in that panel that there be future conferences, but with a different kind of structure, a structure which includes a panel of academicians who are not Turks and not Armenians, but who are invited to constitute a kind of tribunal for judging the legitimacy or illegitimacy of evidences that are to be presented to the conference, like a judge does in court. Because there is a limit to the number of days I certainly want to spend in the rest of my life listening to the amount of garbage that I heard during these days alongside of the new good presentations. I think that the conference structure has to evolve, and junk like Morgenthau is a forgery, and Toynbee is a forgery, and so forth, has to be disallowed, and a new level of responsibility for judging information needs to be instituted. And that's basically what I presented as my proposal at the concluding session. Happy conclusion from the conference. Here's an article from Milliyet newspaper, I assume I'm mispronouncing that also, by a Turkish columnist, and this is all as far back as 2001. I was always convinced of the necessity to show courage and to take to task Talat and company for their misdeeds. These men are our, this is a Turkish man writing, in their primary newspaper, Pol Pot's, Beria's, and Stalin's, and the sooner we call their crimes to account, the better our chances of redeeming ourselves from the scourge of being accused of genocide. That's progress, even though it's got the manipulation in the last sentence. I've come to understand when a Turkish professor, one of our good ones, says, please, give us some time. Don't use the word genocide in Turkey. Use other words. So it isn't too fast, but tell the facts as they are. So I'll conclude with a joke, something that I offered some of my Turkish colleagues in Venice. I said that I really understand the problem they've got in using the word genocide. And so I want to make them an offer. I'm going to offer them the word for genocide in Hebrew. And whenever they want to talk about the Armenian genocide, they can use that word in Turkey. And I want to make a fair deal out of this, because the truth is, I and others in Israel, we also have troubles at various times. When we refer to a genocide other than the genocide of the Jews, you know, we are treated sometimes as disloyal and suspicion, deserving of suspicion. So I suggested to them that they give me the word for Holocaust in Turkish, and then I can use that word for other Holocausts and other genocides. Thank you.
Dessert. I'm a discussant. I'm supposed to talk about some of the themes that Professor Charney brought up. I was one of those Armenians invited to Turkey. I thought it was a trap at first, so I began communicating with the organizers. First, I made a list of requirements for my participation, that I would be allowed to say what I wanted to say, there would be simultaneous translation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't want the Article 301 applied to me. I didn't want to go to jail there for talking about the genocide. At first, they said it would apply. Turkish law applies, but apparently they winked finally, and they didn't enforce it. Then I communicated a lot with Israel because he was ready to go, and I demanded a list of the non-Turkish invitees. So sure enough, after a while, I got the list, which I shared with all the Armenians on my Armenian scholars list. And of course, there were denialists from overseas. And, of course, there were some very decent and respectable people who were invited. And so I thought to myself, why don't I go and stand there and say there was an Armenian genocide, this is exactly what happened, and give our version and say I'm not here to argue it, I'm here to present it. Because I don't believe in arguing the Armenian genocide. I think it's well established. But there are some details that we might discuss, some attitudes that we have to deal with, and perhaps we could work on those things. Then some of my Armenian colleagues got in touch with me. One was Dr. Zekian from Vienna. He was eager to go. He knows Turkish. He wanted to speak in Turkish. And Tessa Hoffman from Germany was on the border. She didn't know whether she should go or not. I finally got on the border, too, because there were a lot of people writing me emails, particularly Armenians, saying it's a trap, don't go, you're going to get into trouble. I had a few phone calls, about 3 hours worth, persuading me not to go. And finally I said, I better not go because I don't want to make too many people angry. Why be way out there? I could be a little bit behind the leaders in this thing and perhaps survive. So I didn't go. And as Israel said in his marvelous remarks, and I thank you for them, those who went did the right thing, and maybe those who didn't go did the right thing. It's really hard to tell. In my mind's eye, I saw 25 believers in the Armenian genocide stand up there in Turkey at Istanbul University with all denialists and say it plain and clear there was a genocide, and there is evidence for this genocide, and that's it, folks. We're not here to argue. We're here to tell you. Now, if 25 people had done that, what would have been the effect? I don't know. But it's something that we have to consider, because as Israel says, times are changing, and those who don't change with the times are going to be left behind, and some very interesting things are happening. You all remember the 50th anniversary when no one had heard of the Armenian genocide, when we were nobodies, there were no demonstrations, no press conferences, no publicity, no textbooks, no books, no nothing. And slowly over the years, we began to build up the evidence to do general research and then primary research and then super research until finally there are dozens of books. And our good Jewish colleagues did a lot of the work on this because of their interest in the Holocaust and genocide in general. And then the non-Armenians and non-Jews came aboard, and many people in the International Association of Genocide Scholars, of which Israel Charney is the current president and one of the founders, as I understand it, a very important group of genocide scholars. These people are now interested. But there still are the hardliners out there. And we have to decide how we're going to deal with that issue. I was asked to speak at the UN about 3 months ago. I was a speaker on a panel. The representative, the ambassador of Rwanda, and then Mendez, who is a special advisor to the Secretary General for genocide. It was organized by an Armenian woman, and it sort of went well, I thought. And then there were hands in the air for questions, and the moderator didn't call on the hands in the back. It turns out they were members of the Turkish delegation, and they were burning mad, really angry. Why didn't you call on us? She said, well, I didn't see your hands. We only had a few opportunities to have comments. But I think she did wrong personally. I welcome people to challenge me on the Armenian genocide. I welcome it. Right now, they're on a big kick about a civil war. Those of you who saw that unfortunate afterword for the program that was just on public television, one of the issues about it, there was a civil war. And someone had written me, a Turk, and I correspond periodically with these Turks. They have a little fun with them. And in this particular item, I said, this is very interesting. I said, all the while, I thought Turks were great warriors, and Armenians were sheep to accept whatever happened to them. I said, but you figure it. There are about 18 million Turks in those days with an army, with a navy, with ammunition and equipment, and a police force, a bureaucracy, transportation, means of information. And there are 2.5 million Armenians with no government, no armaments to speak of, no navy, no bureaucracy, no police force, no special organization. And you mean to tell me that each Armenian killed 2.4 Turks? It's absurd on the face of it. And I think this is the kind of exposure that has to be made. Many of these things are absurd on the face of it. And rather than arguing from documents, just say, are you really telling me that each Armenian man, woman, and child during the genocide, while they were marching, killed 2.4 Turks? This absolutely makes no sense. And I think if we argue in that way, that we can get our points across very readily. Now, unfortunately, it was a bad aftermath for that little panel at the UN. I presume that the Turks went to the Secretary General or someone very high up to complain bitterly. And then Mendez came to our conference down in Boca Raton, and he got up, and the title of the conference was exactly what? Do you remember? It was something, the Armenian Genocide was the second part of it. The Holocaust and the Armenian Genocide, right. So he gets up there and says, I'm glad to be at this conference on the Holocaust and the Armenian events. And he goes into this denialist kind of presentation. And I thought to myself, at least he didn't have to misquote the title. Forget the title. Just say what you want to say. But no, he made it a point to make a denial of the genocide by leaving it out the very title. It's the kind of thing the Turks do in their program. At least they admitted to it, right? So I was very proud of the scholars at that meeting because one by one, the distinguished ones got up and told Mendez, we take denialism seriously and we don't like it. One by one, politely but with force, made this statement. Then Mendez says, I'm very proud that Argentina, my home country, has passed a genocide recognition resolution. And of course, that's all fine and good. But he refused. So we asked him why this situation. He says, the United Nations does not have a policy of recognition of the Armenian genocide. And he distinguished between the reports and the assembly passing the resolution. So he was on thin ice, but there was a little bit of ice under his skates at that point. Then, more recently, there was another panel. This time, another woman took the place of the Rwandan ambassador. Mendez was there, and this time, Vahakan Vajrin was the Armenian speaker. And we had, as the moderator, the weekend foreign editor of the New York Times, a very intelligent, sophisticated woman. And Vahakhan started to speak, and you know Vahakhan is very, very specific on everything. He dealt with the trial, the kind of evidence, what the evidence said, etc., etc. Sort of ironclad. And he went over time about 10 minutes. He's supposed to have 20 minutes, he went 30 minutes. But the moderator graciously said, well, that's just 1 minute for each year he's been studying genocide, because he mentioned he had studied it for 30 years. And so she said, that's just 1 minute for each year he studied the Armenian genocide. Mendez then fled quickly after the panel was over. He said he had to catch a plane, which is probably true, but he probably bought the ticket so he could flee afterwards. And so no one had a chance to ask questions of him at that time. But I suppose the answers would have been very similar to the answers that we got after the first encounter. Israel's done a great job of showing the change that's taking place, both in genocide and Holocaust scholarship, which is being well established. I mean, in the old days, Armenians were interested, then a few good Jewish scholars were interested, but now there's a whole big parcel of people out there interested. The details are now coming out. Turkish scholars are doing some marvelous work, particularly one Kurdish scholar out of Holland who talked about Diyarbakir and the genocide there in excruciating detail that I think no one else has ever known. And it's my impression that the best scholarship on the Armenian genocide has to come from Turkey and from the Turks. We have mined the sources. We have dealt with it all. We have powerful material. But that Turkish material has to come out. And many of those would be oral history interviews. Those of you who saw the Goldberg production, yes, my father told me he put Armenians in the church, and they burnt down the church. And the people were screaming. He said he couldn't get those screams out of his ears for his whole life. Now, that's evidence, isn't it? And there are many stories like that which have been coming out. Many people have admitted to having Armenian ancestry. Many people actually are taking it as a badge of honor for the first time in years. And so we see this great battle, this Armageddon, as Israel sort of pointed out from that newspaper article. The anti-recognition forces are going full swing. The recognition forces are much smaller, but they're being extremely brave. And it is my opinion that we have to help those who are being brave, support them so that they can do their work. One thing I'm proud of is that I was the one who brought Taner Akçam from Germany to the United States to the Armenian Research Center, kept him there a year so he could learn English and do some research and stuff. And it was a gamble. Vahakan Dadjan recommended him, but I didn't know. Who knows? But it turns out, I believe, to have been a very, very positive gamble. And then there's this Turkish-Armenian workshop. It'll be having meetings here next month in New York. And I've attended a few of them. And it's a wonderful thing to see that the ability to communicate is growing. That at first Armenians were here and Turks were there, and neither Armenians or Turks were there. And slowly, slowly, they're coming together with some common language. Maybe not the term genocide, but they're coming with more common language and more understanding. And I personally think that there's no more getting the horse back into the barn. It's out. The many Turkish people themselves want to get the truth out, and I think they're going to succeed in doing it. Maybe not right away, but they're going to succeed in doing it, because in this age of television and newspapers and universal travel and coming to study in America and running into Armenians here and there, you just can't close the doors anymore, as much as these denialists are trying to close the doors. Now, we Armenians then have a problem. And that problem is, how do we deal with this issue? What kind of demands are we making? And what I've noticed on the web, and I read all sorts of junk on the web from Armenians and other people, I spend too much time doing that. Some Armenians are saying, recognition is not enough, we want lands. Now, you tell that to a Turkish scholar who's trying to get to the truth about the Armenian genocide, and you make that person think that he's helping Armenians take land from Turkey, it's going to come to a screeching halt. What you're doing is stopping any normal Turk from working on the genocide issue in a positive way, because none of them are traitors to their country. I believe the earth is flat. I believe I could live in England as happily as in the United States or in Canada, Australia, maybe France, many countries of the world. The world is now an open place. What I believe is Armenians should go back and buy the land, not expect it to be transferred politically. Now, what has happened is some very, I think, touching things, and I will end with this message which Fatma Muge Gocek from the University of Michigan sent out to Colorado, where I'll be in a few days. Since she could not go, she sent a short message, and she said we'll be allowed to spread it around. So with your permission, I'll read it. This is her message to the people of Colorado, the organizers there. Even though I cannot be there with you on this very significant day, I want you to know that as an ethnic Turk, I am not guilty, but I am responsible for the wounds that have been inflicted upon your Armenian people for the last century and a half. I am responsible for the wounds that were first delivered upon you through an unjust deportation from your ancestral lands, and through massacres in the hands of the government that should have been there to protect you. I am also responsible for the wounds caused by the Turkish state, denial to this day of what happened to you back then. I am responsible because all of this occurred and still occurs in the country of which I am a citizen. Yet I want to tell you that I personally travel every year to your ancestral lands to envision what was once there and what is not now there. When I am there, I realize again and again how much your departure has broken the human spirit and warped the land and the people. I become more and more aware of the darkness that has set in since the deportation and disappearance of so many lives, minds, hopes, and dreams. It is for all these reasons that I think it is time for the Turks to recognize that vast loss, to start to uplift that darkness and begin the process of healing. I therefore firmly believe that as soon in the future you will find among you many Turks who also will recount the names of all those brilliant Armenian intellectuals of Istanbul forcibly deported on this very significant day only to be massacred. I look for Turks who will mourn with you this vast loss of ours, Turks who will work alongside you on your ancestral lands to help recreate what was once there. Now, this is a woman who refuses to use the word genocide. But this is a very powerful statement. And, of course, there were others on the workshop list who said, I won't accept any responsibility, I'm not guilty at all. But this is a kind of process that's taking place. It's a very healthy, a very necessary process. And my last word, how are we Armenians going to deal with this? What are we asking for? It's a very vital question. I think we should dedicate a panel discussion to that. And I think the fur will fly and shots will ring out, because I think we have been very naive coming to this spot, and now we're scared. How do we deal with this? How do we deal with the Turks now that a lot of them want to talk to us? How do we deal with the Turkish government that is giving opportunity to Turks to do honest research? It's something we Armenians have to face, and I hope we learn to do it properly. Thank you very much.